Hi, this is Randy Landry, and this is my podcast, common-sense-in-america.com. It was previously Common Sense Ramblings in America under Buzzsprout, but now it is been transferred to my blog, and all my podcasts, past and present, can be found in the category podcast, making it real easy for you guys. So today, and I did that mainly because of monetary, and the fact is I have unlimited storage capacity for all my podcasts. I was able to copy them all over to the new format, and I didn't have to pay any extra money or anything like that, so it was nice. And I was very limited. If I, for instance, would do readings of my books, I had to increase the coverage or the allowance so I could read. I have more podcasts show up. And this way, I don't have to do that. It doesn't matter how long or how much I speak or talk or how long the chapters are that I'm reading. It's not going to cost me a penny more. And it's convenient. Everything's located in one site now. Instead of having to go to two different places. So blog and podcast are all together. So today I'm going to continue reading. I came across this wonderful book I believe it was a Goodwill store. It's called In Premise, a 50th Anniversary Collection. And so I'm normally get at least one magazine a month that has one article in it. So this is what this book is comprised of. It's comprised of those monthly articles. And I've gone over this a little bit in previous podcasts, but the new format this will be the 12 podcast 12B, and it's entitled Whatever Happened to Free Enterprise. It looks like it was a speech written or given by Ronald Reagan in January 1978. So without any further ado, I am going to go ahead and read this one. It's going to be a little shorter than usual. The previous one was rather long that I read from last week, and maybe a bit heavy, but I think this will be much more enjoyable since it was given by Ronald Reagan. And he was known for his ability to make, you know, difficult material more understandable. Government, by going outside its proper province, has caused many, if not most, of the problem that vexes us. How much are we to blame for what has happened, beginning with the traumatic experience of the Great Depression? We the people have turned more and more to government for answers that government has neither the right nor the capacity to provide. Unfortunately, government as an institution always tends to increase in size and power, and so government attempted to provide the answers. The result is a fourth branch of government added to the traditional three of executive, legislative, and judicial, a vast federal bureaucracy that is now being initiated or imitated in too many states and too many cities, a bureaucracy of enormous power that determines policy to a greater extent than any of us realize, and very possibly to a greater extent than our own elected representatives. And it can't be removed from office by our votes. More than anything else, a new political economic mythology, widely believed by too many people, has increased government's ability to interfere as it does in the marketplace. Profit is a dirty word, blamed for most of our social ills. In the interest of something called consumerism, free enterprise is becoming far less free. Property rights are being reduced and have even eliminated. In the name of environmental protection, it is time that a voice be raised on behalf of the 73 million independent wage earners in this country, pointing out that profit, property rights, and freedom are inseparable, and you cannot have the third unless you continue to be entitled to the first two. Even many of us who believe in free enterprise have fallen into the habit of saying when something goes wrong, there ought to be a law. Sometimes I think there ought to be a law against saying that there ought to be a law. In spite of all the evidence that points to the free market, as the most efficient system, we continue down a road that is bearing out the prophecy of Tocqueville, a Frenchman who came here 130 years ago. He was attracted by the miracle that was America. Think of it. Our country was only 7 years old, and already we had achieved such a miraculous living standard, such productivity and prosperity, that the rest of the world was amazed. So he came here, and he looked at everything he could see in our country, trying to find the secret of our success, and then went back and wrote a book about it. Even then, 130 years ago, he saw signs prompting him to warn us that if we weren't constantly on the guard, we would find ourselves covered by a network of regulations controlling every activity. He said if that came to pass, we would one day find ourselves a nation of timid animals with the government, the shepherd. It all comes down to this basic premise. If you lose your economic freedom, you lose your political freedom, and in fact all freedom. Freedom is something that cannot be passed on genetically. It is never more than one generation away from extinction. Every generation has to learn how to protect and defend it. Once freedom is gone, it is gone for a long, long time. Already too many of us, particularly those in business and industry, have chosen to switch rather than fight. We should take inventory and see how many things we can do ourselves that we have come to believe only a government can do. The most dangerous myth is that business can be made to pay a larger share of taxes, thus relieving the individual. Politicians preaching this are either deliberately dishonest or economically illiterate, and either one should scare us. Business doesn't pay taxes, and who better than business could make this message known? Only people pay taxes, and people pay as consumers every tax that is assessed against a business. Passing along their tax costs is the only way businesses can make a profit and stay in operation. The federal government has used its taxing power to redistribute earnings to achieve a variety of social reforms. Politicians love those indirect business taxes because it hides the cost to government. During the New Deal days, an Undersecretary of the Treasury wrote a book in which he said that taxes can serve a higher purpose than just raising revenue. He said they could be an instrument of social and economic control to redistribute wealth and income and to penalize industries and economic groups. We need to put an end to that kind of thinking. To win this battle against big government, we must communicate with each other. We must support the doctor in its fight against socialized medicine, the oil industry in its fight against crippling controls and repressive taxes, and the farmer who hurts more than most because of government harassment and rule changing in the middle of the game. All of these issues concern each one of us, regardless of what our trade or profession may be. Corporate America must begin to realize that it has allies in the independent businessmen and women, the shopkeepers, the craftsmen, the farmers, and the professions. All of these men and women are organized in a great variety of ways, but right now we only talk in our own organizations about our own problems. What we need is a liaison between these organizations to realize how much strength we as a people still have, and we will use that strength. We have had enough of sideline kibitzers telling us the system they themselves have disrupted with their social tinkering can be improved or saved if we will only have more of that tinkering or even government planning and management. They play fast and loose with a system that for 200 years made us the light of the world and the refuge for people all over the world who yearn to breathe free. It is time we recognize that the system, no matter what our problems are, has never failed us once. Every time we have failed this system, usually by lacking faith in it, usually by saying that we have to change and do something else. A Supreme Court justice has said the time has come, is indeed long overdue, for the wisdom, ingenuity, and resources of American business to be marshaled against those who would destroy it. What specifically should we do? The first essential for the businessman is to confront the problem as a primary responsibility of corporate management. It has been said that history is a pattern of silken slippers descending the stairs and the thunder of hobnail boots coming up. Back through the years, we have seen people fleeing the thunder of those boots to seek refuge in this land. Now too many of them have seen the signs that were ignored in their homeland before the end came, appearing here. They wonder if they will have to flee again, but they know that there is no place to run to. Will we, before it is too late, use the vitality and the magic of the marketplace to save this way of life? Or will we one day face our children and our children's children when they ask us where we were and what we were doing on the day that freedom was lost? So I think this is a very powerful speech that was given by Reagan, and it is certainly appropriate and germane to today's society and what is going on. We have a Reagan II in office right now, President Trump, President 47, previously 45. And it has been said that it was very fortuitous that Trump's second term was stolen from him, that it gave him 4 years to learn and think and stew over what happened in his first term, that he would improve on it in his second term. So maybe, just maybe, if the government and the left gets the hell out of his way and allows him to do what he needs to do, just maybe we might save this country. But, excuse me, they're going and fighting him tooth and nail because he wants to get rid of the gravy train. He wants to get rid of the corruption that it is in our government. This swamp needs to be drained and cleaned out. A big, long tongue call. A lot of work to be done. The problem is he only has 4 years to do it. He has a good vice president, I believe, the running mate, J.D. Vance. But I worry about J.D. Vance. I thought Pence was pretty good, too, and he turned out to be a Trojan horse, basically, that just backstabbed Trump, along with Mike Pompeo and a few others in office in this cabinet. So I worry again this time, will J.D. Vance be strong enough to fight the left? Because Trump will not be able to get rid of all of it on his own. Will J.D. Vance keep the right people in office and choose the replacements that are well, are good, and appropriate? Will he be strong enough and popular enough to win? There's only going to be one Trump. And J.D. Vance has very, very big shoes to fill. All right, without any further ado, I'm going to wrap this up and keep it short. If you notice a slightly difference in my speech patterns, a little slurred now and then, it's because I am going through hell with my teeth. I have a family trait where the male population at the age of 50 or so have their teeth start disintegrating and eventually fall out or get pulled out. Well, my teeth got so bad that I ended up having them all pulled, and I'm just 61 years old, going at 62. But I'm not able to tolerate the temporary dentures at all. So I'm in a battle, and I just changed my insurance because it was getting ripped off by the work insurance. But I should have kept a dental. It was better than nothing. And right now I have nothing. So it'll be a while before I get my teeth back in. So please bear with me. Hopefully my speech is not too bad. So as always, watch your back. Don't give up the fight. the fight is far from being over. If nothing, even with a victory in 2024 by Trump, it just maybe put it to a second battle now. The fight's going to continue. Take care, guys.